We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Diane with EdWeb, and it's my honor to introduce our presentation today with the Congressional Medal of Honor Foundation. I'm here with Kathy Metcalf, Vice President of Education for the CMOH Foundation, and our honored guest, John Baca, who received the medal for his service with the U.S. Army in Vietnam. And we're also joined by Mr. Robbins' students from Steel Canyon High in California. And I want to thank all of you for coming. Okay, Kathy and John, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thanks so much, Diane. It's good to be here. We're happy to be in Steel Canyon High School in San Diego, beautiful Southern California. Apologies to those of you across the country who were snowed in. We dressed appropriately for the day today. John has lived in San Diego how long now this time?
4 years.
Only 4 years?
Julian.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
7 years, that counts Pacific too, Beach. So. Probably about 12 years.
So Southern California, more than 20 years, and years ago he was here as well. So he said that Hawaiian shirts were the dress of the day, and you'll notice that the classroom is cooperating. Thank you all. I appreciate that. To get us started, for our listeners and viewers online, please know that we will address as many of your questions as we can. The Steel Canyon students are prepared to deliver those questions on your behalf as Mr. Robbins shares those questions out. For listeners, I noticed on our audience, so that all of you know, our audience on that poll came up about a quarter high school, not quite a quarter middle school, more than a quarter elementary. We have a lot of elementary students logging on today. We have a lot of sixth and fifth grade students who participate in the character program. And then the general population, about a quarter of our audience. So we have a really diverse audience, but especially for those adults who are watching, our focus today is on character and what makes you the person you are and how do you deal with the challenges in your life, and especially when it's under the pressure that leads to the kind of thing like a Medal of Honor. So I am just as pleased as can be to be here with my longtime friend, John Baca. We first met each other when I was 16 years old. It's hard to even remember that long ago, isn't it? You were fresh back from Vietnam and working at the VA at the time. Can you give us a little bit of background about your growing up life? I'd like to think that everybody out there has watched John's video, and I know the students here in Steel Canyon have. Those of you who are watching online, make sure you look at that. John tells you a little about his background, but I know a lot of the questions today will have to do with how'd you get into the service? So why don't we start with what led you to the point where you ended up in the Army?
I went to Kearney High, but I was more out of school than I was in school, and a lot of burglaries, you know, got me in and out of juvenile hall. And so back then, you know, Vietnam was going on, and we had to make a choice: either spend time, the judge tells you, got tired of seeing you in the same courtroom and the same judge, you know, it's either jail or you go in the military. And then they were drafting. I got drafted, and I was off parole, and did my 2 years. I was just 2 years in the service, and February 10th is when I, when I put my helmet on a grenade. And should I go there already?
Sure, if you'd like.
I just said turned 21 years old, and January 10th I was 21, and February 10th, you know, all. You know, a grenade comes in, it's right before dusk, and it's like you see it, and you know that's not part of the program, and the time kind of stops, and your whole life kind of flashes before your eyes. And I'm sure some of you had an experience like that, maybe in traumatic life and death moments, but my friend Art was near me. I pushed him out of the way, and you let everybody know there's a grenade, and I, you know, it's like my mom and my sisters flashed before my eyes. I wanted to reach out and grab them, and I I had gone over there. When I got out of juvenile hall, I met an old fella, a godly man. He was a born-again believer in the Lord Jesus, and I used to go over his house early in the mornings. I'd read the Bible. He'd teach me what the Bible meant, and I'd spend some quiet time alone. And when I went to Vietnam, I always had my Bible with me. That was my coat of armor. You know, a bullet would shoot you somewhere, and you get stuck in the 91st Psalm or somewhere, and I wore it on the side and in front. But I know I'm getting ahead of myself, but I covered that grenade up with the helmet, and then time kind of stops, and maybe it's a dud and it won't go off. So I screamed, and when I screamed, it blew up and blew up in my stomach and legs, and I'm laying on my back, and I have this beautiful, like a little kitten or a puppy falls asleep in your arms, or you're holding a little baby. You feel that love. That's what I felt when I was dying. I felt like there was angels holding me, and because I always sensed that heavenly presence was nearby, and I wanted to die. I had no pain. My stomach was coming out, and I was just thirsty, and the stickers around my neck were bothering me, but it was a beauty. You know, I love sharing that. So many people go in, they shut down. They never talk about their military experience, and that needs to get out. That needs to been released in them for years, and there's a lot of healing. And I was a point man months earlier, off and on. Christmas morning in 1969, I walked up a North Vietnamese soldier sitting on a bunker. He was talking to some people in the side. Had I not did that, I would have led our platoon into an ambush. And if I would have survived, they would have got blown away or killed. You know, you live with that guilt, and I probably would have been one of the suicide people, maybe. It was a joy taking him alive. He had pictures of his mom and his sisters, and I had pictures of my mom, my two sisters, and we shared them. And then 20 years later, I went back to Vietnam, six of us, and worked alongside this North Vietnamese soldiers, and I believe that same person, he was there working with us, and it was beautiful, that reconnection.
So how about if I put some of this together for, because John has so many amazing stories to tell us, but let me kind of put some things in order here. So, and this will give you an opportunity to decide where to fit these questions in. So you went into the service because you had the choice to go to the service or go to jail, which is no longer an option, by the way. You better keep yourselves in order here, which I know all these students are ready to graduate, so they're in pretty good shape. But you didn't really intend to go to the service originally. And then a couple of particular life-changing moments were meeting that North Vietnamese soldier on Christmas morning and choosing, when you could have killed him, choosing instead to take him alive and getting to meet the enemy and share common moments with him. And then a couple months later, throwing yourself on a grenade, and in doing so, saving your platoon. So those are the pivotal moments that fall into place with John's Medal of Honor story. So from here, let's go ahead and start going to some student questions. I know they want to ask a little about your childhood, and then we'll see what other questions come out that relate to that, because I think that gives you a good background about what was so important to John.
Okay, so my name is Aaron, and I remembered in the Medal of Honor video, you said that as a child you got in trouble a lot. And I was wondering if it was the Army and the discipline that came with that that changed that behavior, or did you personally decide to change that?
Could our audience hear the question okay? The question was, Is the Army what changed John's troublesome childhood behavior, or was it something else?
The Army did. When we were all, I don't want to go long in the questions, but you know, all the we had the Chicanos, the Blacks, we called them Soul Brothers, and the whites, the poor whites, we were all together in the foxholes and in the jungles. We all got along together good. And, you know, some of those guys stayed in country, re-upped another year, to keep us, to, they were like our big brothers to keep us alive. You know, like they forget everything you learned in training and we got 5 days to teach you over here how to stay alive. But all our races, all the races got together and we were all brothers.
So it was like mainly the people and the experiences that helped you.
Yeah.
So were those people you would have been not getting along with here in the States before you went into the service?
It's, you know, there's so many gangs and everything. We had our clubs and all. We had the Centaurs and we're green felt jackets, but all trying to be cool growing up and follow the herd, you know, do what we all want to be different, but we all do the same thing together. And the military, well, it changes things, especially when you've been being shot at with the real, you're in the real, everybody's got their heads down protecting each other. And it's sad to hear about drive-bys and everything happening now. And it's so sad. It should stop. It needs to stop.
Thank you. Another good answer. We have another question?
Yeah. Hi, my name is Ashley. In your video, you said it wasn't easy.
A little louder, Ashley.
Scream at me.
In the video, you said it wasn't easy wearing the Medal of Honor.
Why do you feel that? Why is it not easy wearing the Medal of Honor?
It's just, I remember a couple times going after they dedicated the Vietnam Memorial, I'd always loved wearing overalls and look like a farmer, but I had the medal in my pocket and other people knew, John, we know you got the medal. We know it's hard for you to wear it, but wear it for us. You know, that take it out and the wife would be there, she'd put it on my neck and then I guess once you have it, you feel comfortable wearing it, but just parading around and wearing it, I just couldn't do it. If somebody else knows I got it, they would. I remember doing the run for the wall, and they'd stop at veterans' hospitals and in the vans, and then the suits and everybody who don't visit the patients, they want to get pictures with all of us and some of the guys in our squad. John, give me a medal, let's put it on. We go visit the guys. Third or fourth floor that are dying in the VA hospital and wearing the medal for those guys in the VA hospitals brought life and joy into their last moments and I'll do that again anytime.
Thank you. I know you've made a lifetime of visiting our soldiers in the hospitals.
Never enough.
Do we have another question from students?
Hi, I'm Grace and you mentioned that school was a struggle for you. Can you explain why and what, if anything, you
would
do differently?
From the grenade episode?
No, I'm going to repeat the question both for you and for our audience who may not have heard. So the question was, John mentioned that he struggled with school growing up. Why, do you know why you did? And what would you do differently if you could do it over again?
While in school? I don't know, I just rebelled against authority or I never did like reading. Now I read all the time and I liked the cooking class, economics, and I liked typing. I had a beautiful female typist, so I had to impress her. And just, I wish I would have stayed in school. I graduated from Youth Authority. You know, getting in trouble so much being in juvenile hall. But God, if you're in your 1 or a couple years, stay in it. Don't ever drop out, regardless how frustrating and difficult it becomes. And you feel good when it's all done, but it's gone. But I finished somehow.
Yep. and have moved on in a very difficult manner, for sure. Good question. Thank you. Another question?
Mm-hmm. I'm Ray, and I was wondering, why was it important for you to return to Vietnam? Can you describe that experience? And what was it like to work alongside former enemies?
Oh, boy. Okay, so there goes the rest of the hour. That's a great question. Why did you feel it was important to go back to Vietnam, and what was it like to work alongside former enemies?
It's like during the war, you know, we did so much damage from the the droppings from the air, especially in North Vietnam, Christmas bombing in 1972. And we just annihilated the company, the country, and so many, a lot of the schools, little hospitals or clinics were along the railroad route in the north, and a lot of those bombs that we dropped destroyed their structures, the schools, and my friend Art, who I was wounded with, when I pushed him out of the way, he got wounded in the legs when the grenade blew up sideways, and we held hands on the helicopter, and he got a job working in the vet center in Martinsburg, West Virginia, and I was living with his family, and we were farming, and his sons Thomas and Michael and Christine, I'd pick them up at the school bus down below, babysit them. We'd always have to watch Lady and the Tramp every single day, and I'd buttered at popcorn, but we all worked at a ski resort together, and Art got a notice about a group going back to North Vietnam building a clinic, what was destroyed during the war. But God, if you go, Art, I'll go with you. And we did. And I was so scared to come out of my room. There was eight of us that went back. Two we had to send back to the States. They were just frightened and scared. We had two girls with us, and one was call them donut dollies, a Red Cross worker. She came with us, and she made those Vietnamese women like they were princesses, treated them, they were like gold, because the men were rough with them. You know, they were doing the dirty work, working in the clinic, but just to be a part, and we worked with some of the North Vietnamese, had no arms, no hands, they were blown off with mines. And so you bring delight and joy into our life, coming back, what you destroyed, you come back and rebuild, and we're so glad, and I'll always remember that. And I remember when leaving after 6 weeks, one fella wrote down, when you wake up to the sound of the wind, it's the calling of your Vietnamese friend. If you wake up to the sunlight, it's the eye light of the Vietnamese child. If you wake up to the raining, it's the tears of the Vietnamese worker who love you very much. If you wake up to nothing, that means the war comes to our land again. And they just, when it was time to leave after 6 weeks, the Vietnamese are small but muscular. They'd pick you up and sniff you. They want to remember your scent, what you smelt like. And then we're all crying. They were touching each other's tears. And some of them wanted to come back to America with us. We can't take you. And we saw some of the GIs that stayed over there, never wanted to come home. You know, they fell in love with the people in the country, and they didn't trust anybody from the government coming over, giving an account, that they heard what we were doing, and they said, hey, we stayed here. We want to let you know, thank you for coming back and rebuilding what we all destroyed. And it was a beautiful experience. I hope someday take my daughter over there with me to see the love that they have for one. They care for their old folks. They can't stick them in homes. Once we're in homes, we never visit them no more, but they're still the wise people of the family. They're wonderful, loving people.
Thank you so much. That was a great question and a great answer. And I'm sure teachers who are watching, that's a great future discussion question too, about the various aspects of war and what drives it and the difference between people and powers. Another question? Dusty?
I'm Dusty. And Dusty. So you mentioned in the video that you lied to your mom and told her you weren't really on the front lines. You were in the rear of the war doing like laundry and not really in action. Yeah. So what was her reaction when she found out that you were actually in the front lines?
I remember I left, it was Christmas morning. I called my mom here in San Diego and Linda Vista area. They had what the watch lines, like a ham radio operators or something. I guess I woke her up at 9 o'clock in the morning and to let her know. Yeah, I lied to her. I said I was a laundry man or passing out mail, and I didn't want to worry her anymore that I was in the front lines, but. And I had a chance to go to the Bob Hope USO. You know, some of us get selected when Bob Hope and all the people would come over for the USO shows. but I got a chance to call my mom. That was even better. And no wonder, during that time, I tried to sneak away to visit a guy. He was in a, we were singing Christmas carols on the bunker the night or two nights before. And they called him out. We called him Cranky. He was from Minnesota, big mountain man. And we all had nicknames. But he went out in a little caterpillar. They were tearing down the wood line, and a tree fell in, severed his legs. And he was in the hospital, and I wanted to sneak away to try to find him and just to hold his hand. I never got a chance, but I got a chance to talk to my mom, and that was a joy and a delight.
That's a good piece of information, by the way. Notice that not all war-related wounds are combat-related necessarily. You know, we hear we've lost a lot of servicemen in the last couple of years to helicopter and plane crashes and such. And who would think that you go to war that you would be so severely wounded by a falling tree? But, you know, the accidents are real.
Can you hear me on that side?
We don't mean to be ignoring you. Sorry about that. No, you
I want to spin around one more time.
Back in front of the camera. Okay, we have another question.
Hi, my name is Maddie, and I have a question. A number of medal honor recipients say that they don't deserve the medal. They were just doing their job. Why do you think your fellow soldiers nominated the medal, and how does this make you feel?
Yeah, I guess most of us feel like that. You know, we just got caught in a situation that anybody, we think, and somebody else would have reacted the same way that we did. You know, and I think we all think that. And
I think that's a great question. But I think I've grown up around Medal of Honor recipients, as you know, because my dad had the medal. But there's one select group of Medal of Honor recipients. The citations are widely varied. Most of them include saving the lives of fellow soldiers. Some of them are pretty much completely offensive action, where somebody went out and really put themselves in the line of fire for trying to advance the military action at the time. But then there's the group that chose to save their fellow soldiers by an action that, in most cases, ended their lives. And from the way you described falling on that grenade, you pretty well knew that there was a very good chance that you were not going to survive that. That the helmet, putting your helmet under you, is not enough by itself to save you, at least from severe bodily harm. And that intentionally putting oneself on a grenade for the sake of saving others is almost an automatic Medal of Honor. The outcome of it is not automatic at all. There's at least one Medal of Honor recipient who I know who did that, pushed the grenade into the mud, and the mud of the rice paddies diffused it enough that it didn't cause him severe harm. There's another one that fell on a grenade that didn't go off. There are a couple that threw themselves on grenades to save the guys, and they turned out to be dead. So how it turns out is greatly different. But that one is, you know, yours was an obvious act of sacrifice. So I think it makes it a little different from most medals. And that's kind of you to say you thought you were just doing your job. But I'm sure that it never doesn't say anything when you sign up for the military that says if a grenade wanders in, you should throw yourself on it. That's way outside the line of duty. Good question, though. Another question.
My name is John Bach.
A little louder, please.
Okay. Can you tell us about a time when someone has sacrificed a great deal for you?
When has somebody done something for you, some sacrifice for you? Who's looked after John?
I'm waiting for my daughter to send me a Boston cream pie. Keep hinting.
Megan, are you watching?
Everybody does kind things for me. That she's 90 years old, 91. Angie, she retired Navy captain. She was put in for an admiral, but they would have showed her off in the Pentagon. Just a female admiral would have been the second in the medical corps, a female. She was a lieutenant commander at the time when I was at Balboa Naval Hospital, and her nurses and corpsmen took care of me when I had complications. They were always there. She would always come around after her shift and, "How you doing, hon?" You know, she was like a mom to me. And you wake up and whatever meds you're on or complications, hemorrhaging, and you wake up, she'd be there at my bedside. And the old sunshine ladies from the church I went to, they'd be there all the time praying with me, holding my hand. And I scared them more, my complications in the hospital, you know, just hemorrhaging and whatever. But she was the leader of the pack who cared and loved me. And yes, I'll always remember that.
How long were you in the hospital after your wounds?
I spent a year in the hospital. And Angie, she has caretakers now, and some are nice, some aren't so nice. But my niece is with her on the weekends, my niece is big. She can lift her up and move her, and takes pictures on the phone, makes her look like a giraffe or a raccoon, all those little funny pictures. Because Angie's, you know, she's just old age, you know. But I love her, and I'll go visit her on Saturdays, and when the Nebraska Cornhuskers were playing, I'd have to go over and watch a football game with her, and that's where she went to college. But she was, you remember those people that used to come to visit you, and the people I used to hang out with and get high with, get drunk with before I went in the service when I was in the hospital, they never came to visit. The gang members, they never came to visit. Just the people that were in Vietnam that I hung, they would come to visit you. So I guess whoever you choose as your friends, you got to be wise and know that they'll be there. I mean, maybe, you know, they're got your back, always take care of you. Like you guys take care of little kids or your little sisters or brothers if they get hurt. You're there for them. You know, I think that's what we did for each other in the military. We'll take care of each other in that situation. Just a natural God-given instinct that we never knew we had.
Good answer. Good question. Thank you very much. We have another question?
Yeah. I'm John. I'm Sydney. And I was wondering, was there anyone in particular that helped you after the war get back into civilian life and go back to normal?
Who helped you after the war get back into civilian life and get your life on track?
Let me see. I think getting a job with the Vets Administration, but they sent me to Japan the third or fourth week from Vietnam. Well, I was in Japan 3 or 4 weeks and I had complications, and my mom was getting these nice telegrams from Western Union, need to be concerned for your son, been moved to the critically ill list. So somehow somebody flew her over to be at my bedside. She was there every day and trying to be a mom to the other guys. Some didn't make it. And I said, you can't be a mom to them. But then we came back together to the States, and I spent a year in the Naval Hospital, San Diego. And that's when Angie, I met her, and she befriended my mom. And a few people that had been in Vietnam, you know, they would come to visit me. And then the church I was going to, my old minister, he used to come with his violin, Emil Ballier. He would play the "Great is Thy Faithfulness" and "He Hideth My Soul in the Cleft of the Rock." And so I got out, and I went to Southern California College, Vanguard, for one semester. My old minister became the president of the college, and he got a call from the Pentagon. I was going to go see Richard Nixon in 2 weeks. That was June of 71. Then I was the most popular guy on campus. And then I bought my mom a dress for that. So we got to see Nixon. And there were 7 medals presented. Richard Nixon passed on. 2 of the guys are still living. Me and Pete Lemon were still living from this. And then January in 73, my mom had passed away. She was 46. And I buried her in that dress I bought her. And then I got a job. Rick Sorensen, he was Medal of Honor fellow from Okinawa in World War II. Her dad worked at the VA, and there was Rudy Hernandez from the Korean War, and Ben Wilson. Ben Wilson, there was, and I got a job working as a benefits counselor. So they kind of, they broke me in how to work with veterans getting out of the military, having problems, and I liked it. I had a blind fellow who taught me all my regulations. Bob, you can't see. Yeah, but I know everything up here. Okay.
I used to hear that sometimes.
Bob Ralph.
Okay, that you used to sometimes get in trouble for vanishing from work. Where did they find you when you were gone?
Every time I built up enough sick leave, 8 hours, I would be on the Santa Monica Pier ready to go sport fishing, taking a sport fishing boat.
But then, also, you told me you were over at the hospital across the freeway from the VA all the time visiting the vets.
Yeah, we had like an internship working with some of the wounded guys or a lot of the forgotten patients. They just want somebody to be there, talk to them because they know they won't be around too much longer. But there was always, you can't visit too long with the people. You have to fill out forms. You know, that's the problem. It's always about forms or a quota, and these people need someone to talk to. And I would have stayed there. But I felt because someone was there when I was dying, and these guys needed somebody that would just be a part of their last days. And I enjoyed that. And I'm going to start visiting the veterans home in Chula Vista again. I'll bring them some Julian pies, and they'll call me over. I've done a pie man, come here. I want to talk to you. I don't want a slice of pie. I want a whole pie. You're going to share it with nobody? Heck no. Bring a whole traditional apple pie in their room. I love it. I got to do it again. I get pies up in Julian. I send them to families. Snowball Express. Look that up. Gary Sinise took it over. It's families who lost moms and dads in Iraq and Afghanistan in training accidents. And you hear all the time on the news, I mean, about the troops. They need to pull all these people back, men and women in uniform. They never mention about when they get killed, or they got young widows at home. They have children that love them, and moms and dads, and I'm carried away.
Now, that's an important year, continuing service and sacrifice. John goes every year to Snowball Express to work with spend the time with the kids.
Volunteer.
Who have lost parents to the war.
I tell them, I jumped on a hand grenade. Wow, that's so cool. You know, did you stick up in a tree, or are you a transformer? I said, no. But I tell them, and these are young kids. We had about 300 new families. Just lost, some lost their moms. We had grandmothers, lost their sons, brought their kids. And they don't, no one knows what really happened to their mom or dad when they're killed, die overseas. I tell them, I believe the angels that were holding me the night I was dying, I bet your dad had that same beautiful feeling. You know, his heart was breaking because he knew he wouldn't see his family again. And then the little kids, they said, pick me up and hold me and hug me. And I'm crying my eyes out. They dressed me up as a snowman. What I look like is wrap me up in toilet paper.
On the airplane on the way back.
From Orlando to L.A. And someone scratched my nose. You know? And they put Christmas lights on me. And it was beautiful. And I had a bunch of Medal of Honor coins I gave to the kids. And just, these kids will never see their parents, their real fathers again. In Vietnam, we had generals like Colin Powell, Norman Schwarzkopf, Peter Pace. When they were lieutenants and captains, they were in the firefights with us, enlisted men. They were saw, and they made 4 stars. The generals nowadays, they're sending people overseas, men and women. They're not there with them. You know, they need to be, if they're going to send them overseas, be in the front lines with them. Stop sending them over because they come back or they don't come back. No one knows the feeling when burning metals on fire and burning through your flesh and bones, these people sending them over, if they've experienced it, high-ranking officers, maybe they'd put an end to all this war. It breaks your heart, you know. We get mad. Us guys who've been over there, the ones who's calling the shots are not there. You know,
that's a leadership lesson. the leadership lesson of who's, you know, never ask anybody to do something you wouldn't be willing to do yourself.
Like the Civil War generals, they were in the front. They led their Stonewall Jackson. They were incredible men. I finished what I'm saying long before I quit talking. I have a question. How much does it cost for a pirate to have his ears pierced?
Well, don't give him the answer.
The answer? A buccaneer.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Lighten the mood. It's always good to have a joke on hand. I can't remember the punchlines, but we have another question.
Oh, yeah. Boy.
It's okay. You're doing great.
And I was wondering, can you describe how important your faith has been in your life or how it's influenced your life?
How has your faith influenced your life? How important has that been?
You know, I wish I had, I brought just a couple of Medal of Honor coins. I don't have any more. Passed them out to the Snowball families, but... I have a, on the scripture, I have a Luke 15:20 about the prodigal son coming back home, and the father saw him from a great distance, had compassion, ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And I was going to Bible college. I thought I'd go back to Vietnam as a missionary, and I'd go to the college campuses and talk to people about the Lord, or, you know, they want to hear it. Then I'll show them this is what God did for me. I'll show them my scars. I felt them when I was dying overseas. And so, wow, really? I want to hear about it. I've gotten away. I'm the prodigal son that hasn't come back home. And I know what I need to do. I just turned 70. And I want to spend my last days just quiet and visiting people who are forgotten about and old folks' homes and, you know, just...
You know, John, service and faith is, I've got a son who's going into ministry, and he says that faith is more about action than it is about words. And you live that faith every day when you go see these people. So thank you for sharing that with us. We have another question.
Hi, I'm Julia. And what did you sense was the mood of the country during right after the Vietnam War?
From your perspective,
the
mood of the country during and right after the Vietnam War?
I think a lot. I know a couple of the parades, you see groups standing on the side, Vietnam vets against the war. I think a lot, they were there. They were there, and I think a lot of them helped probably end the war. You know, and my lieutenant, well, he retired from the Pentagon, John Dotson, he lay alongside me, removing the burning metal from my intestines and washing my intestines. You know, it's a beautiful love story.
This one.
You know, you can share it with people. And And, well, he retired from the Pentagon, and, you know, it's like the war was to go so long. You know, they know when they're going to end the war and when they're going to begin it and they can estimate how many casualties. The secret stuff that no one knows, and yet it's covered up by our government.
When you were over there, did you hear things from home, or were you too busy fighting the fight?
Yeah, we were going to go home in 6 months. You know, you always get the rumor that makes you going home. And it was all false rumors.
How long were you actually overseas?
I was just there a short 7 months. Our time was, Army time was 12 months. Marines had to do 1 month longer, 13 months. A lot of those guys were killed in the 13th month in the Marine Corps. You know, why couldn't we all just unite together for our same time? There's a friend, Brian Alvarado. He's dying of ALS. He has a trach. Has to be fed. There's a book out called The Burn Pits. Halliburton was burning chemicals. Men and women in uniform were breathing this 24 hours a day, and they come down with hundreds of thousands of terminal cancer.
This is in the Gulf War.
Yeah, in Afghanistan or Gulf War. And women can't have babies, or if they do, they're deformed. And it's sad, and nobody owns up. It's like Dr. Spock, you know, does not compute or something in Star Trek. And the hidden stuff that are kept from us, it breaks your heart.
Did you, because you went to work for the VA once you recovered from your wounds, well, actually by that time, the war was pretty much over because you, 71, 72, it was wrapping down.
Yeah, I think they were coming back in 73.
Yeah.
My friend Art, who we held hands in a helicopter, we took a couple military ops together. We went to Hawaii and we saw all the guys coming back. It was great. A bunch of them.
Were they still coming back when you were working as a veterans benefits counselor?
I didn't know. I didn't hear much on that.
Okay, because my dad used to meet them at El Toro. They'd bring them in directly from Vietnam to El Toro Marine Base here in Southern California. Take them into an auditorium, tell them here what your benefits are. Thank you for your service, and send them home like that. Yeah. That was all the reacclimation that those guys, a lot of those guys got coming back from Vietnam. It was a pretty harsh time.
My friend Art and I, we were going to go to Australia for R&R, 5 or 6 days, you know, rest and relaxation. And then I went to Australia on a military hop years later. But then you saw parents, Australian families, they would meet the guy and take him home with them.
Oh, nice.
You know, some of the guys go back and marry the daughters. Because I went in 1990 because I met a couple Aussies and they, how you doing, Mike? Come over to my country and welcome home. They had a welcome home parade in Melbourne. And I sat alongside a fella, Sir Edward Dunlop, Weary Dunlop, like tires wear out, called him Weary. He was in the Chinese prison camps in World War II. He was a surgeon. And he took the beatings, like Stockdale took the beatings. Admiral Stockdale, POW, got the Medal of Honor. But I got to sit next to this old fellow, Weary Dunlop, and I got all the letters that he wrote me. The Aussies, this was 1990, and they had a parade for the Australians that served in Vietnam. And I went on one of the reserves, one of the parks where they had the kangaroos. I got right next to a big red kangaroo, and I was petting it. And I love it. He would hit me with the paw, don't stop. And, oh, okay. And I had a picture of it, and I don't know what happened to it.
Like he didn't knock you out.
I mean, how many people get to pet a big red kangaroo?
You have a lot of great stories. Do we have another question?
Yeah.
Oh, what did you think? How did you feel when you heard you were going to be awarded the Medal of Honor?
You can't hide when you're in college. Just, I don't know, you know, like probably getting the graduation when you graduate from high school. Guess they wear the cap and gowns, I don't know, and get your diploma. Probably just frightened and scared, apprehensive. And we waited for hours in the White House when we were there, and we all had to go to the bathroom. You know, we're waiting for Richard Nixon. But my birthday is January 9th and Nixon's is January. Mine's the 10th and Nixon's was January 9th. I always send him birthday cards. Never heard from him. But that's okay. And Monsoon's is the 9th. But I was happy for my mom. And my stepdad, you know, me and my two sisters, we never knew our real fathers. You know, we're Scotch and Irish and German, and my stepdad came in our life and was in the military, and he mostly overseas, so he never was there with us, and he wasn't really trying. We tried to made an effort to get close, but he didn't open up. But I wanted him. My mom and dad were separated, but I wanted him to be at the White House when I got my medal, and they found him somewhere in Europe working with the Merchant Marines, and I was happy for them and my two sisters, and especially my mom.
That was your she got to talk.
Yeah, Condoleezza Rice. And my mom got to. She liked always liked Richard Nixon's wife, Pat Nixon, and they shared a couple words. And they make great iced tea at the White House.
They do, don't they?
That's why we had to go to the bathroom.
Have you been back to the White House since?
When we got a picture with Donald Trump at we had a Medal of Honor convention in Annapolis, September, and we all got to go to the White House. And we got photos with Donald Trump. That was nice.
You also have photos, not in the White House, but at a basketball game with President Obama.
Oh, 11-11-11 on the Carl Vinson aircraft carrier. The guys got me, Roy White and Monsoon. We were there, Roy White and this fella Bill, or Monsoon we call him, and they started Snowball Express in 2006. A year later, they got Gary Sinise involved with the families. But Obama and his wife, everybody's on the aircraft carrying two empty seats. Obama and his wife, Michelle, came and, oh my God, we got the president here. And all the wounded guys were coming over, and the guys that were in wheelchairs that couldn't go over to him, he went over to them. He signed their, you know, and he was one of, just wonderful. Brought tears to people's eyes. And the fellow next to me named Mark lost both his legs, and he and a friend climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, took a couple years, three others, amputees, and he leans over, Mr. President, how are your two daughters? And he named them by name, and Obama looked, and he said, I have two daughters, but the names were the same. But just, you know, he's the president of the United States then, you know, and everybody, a lot of people didn't like him, but one-on-one, he touched people's hearts, and he was right there touching them. And I got to get a picture with them. And Michelle Obama, I said, we have a lady with us who just lost her husband. And little Maddie was 8 months old. Her husband was a Marine captain. Is there a chance to get a picture with both you and your husband? She made it happen. That's the one on the wall. And Monsoon pushes me out of the way, and he's standing next to President Obama. And I'm next to Bill or Monsoon, and I got tears in my eyes. Obama looked at me, and he smiled, and I was so happy that he made that happen. And it was wonderful. And all the generals were on the other end of the aircraft carrying their big tent. They didn't even come out and mingle with the wounded. And just broke your heart. The so, ones who send them over. Seeds.
John's friend, Monsoon, that you've heard him mention a couple of times, that's one of those nicknames that he was telling you about earlier, has been a teacher, and we were hoping he could be with us today, but he was not feeling well. But he is now retired from teaching special ed to high school students up in Long Beach, California. So again, another serviceman who has dedicated a life to service, because as we all know, right, Mr. Robbins, teaching is also a form of service.
So he survived double breast cancer, and there's not too many men that survived double breast cancer. I think he lost his first wife from breast cancer.
Yeah, it's important to keep up with your health care. Another question.
Of all the issues that Medal of Honor recipients can use their influence for, why was character development so important?
Oh, why are you willing to be involved with character development? Of all the issues that you can use your influence for?
Kathy got me involved. I mean, I would kind of like shy away, and I didn't want to go to events, and you got me involved with this, and I think I'll be, when this is over, I'll say, God, I want to do this again. A couple times I was asked to give a flag to a family at Miramar I'd never known when they brought back that Marine from Tarawa.
Yes.
You know, 75 years ago, World War II, they brought remains back. I was asked to give a flag to a sister, and I never knew them. And you see it on TV in a movie, they give the folded flag and, you know, thank you for your service. You're great. When you do it personally, it just overwhelms you, just everybody. And they found a pilot that was shot down. They found his remains after 50 years, a Navy commander. I think 2 years ago, I got to present a flag to a family I never knew, and I loved it. And I guess this is kind of like it, not presenting flags, but.
Well, you know, Gary Bykirk, one of your fellow Medal of Honor recipients, who has been very active with the character development program, says that you never really learn. Life does not become significant until you start to operate outside your comfort zone. And for a lot of us, Mr. Robbins and I talked about this the other day, public speaking is pretty scary. And even though this is a fairly small room and there aren't very many of you, it's still public speaking. And then we have this wonderful audience that's out here asking questions from afar as well. And I know that you didn't want to come and talk to teachers the first time I asked. I drove him all the way up to the Reagan Library. And he said, could I wear a Hawaiian shirt? Hence the Hawaiian shirts today. And when he was mostly done, he said, could I do this again? And thank you for stepping outside your comfort zone to talk to people. I really appreciate that. You do great service and your stories influence
all of us. And I get to swivel in a chair.
So let me just say that he takes me outside my comfort zone too. Do we have another question?
Yeah, I'll see you again. If you had one lesson or a piece of advice for high school or middle school students, what could you leave us with? So like, what would you say?
When I first got the Medal of Honor coins, I had that a Bible verse, finally, Philippians 4:8, finally, whatever things are true, whatever things are honest, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, meditate or dwell on these things.
That's a great piece of advice. You know, if you always look to the positive, you're going to go the direction you look.
Finish school. Don't drop out of high school like I almost did.
Great advice. Great advice. We tend to walk the direction we're looking. Another question?
Yes. Hi, I'm Marissa. What do you think are the biggest challenges facing our generation today, and what advice?
Oh, you have a daughter that's just a little older than they are. What do you think are some of the biggest challenges they face, and what advice can you offer them? I think we just got the advice, but.
My daughter, she turned 31 December 14th, and I keep making New Year's resolutions to get her married. She's got a boyfriend, Greg. I met him. Did you meet him back there? He's wonderful. They went to Europe for 3 weeks, and a little dog adopted them, and they snuck it into bed and breakfasts, and I think Greg's dad is going to have it mailed from Massachusetts, from Italy to Massachusetts. It was in, you know, the bed for 3 or 4 weeks. So I never was there the first 12 years when my daughter was growing up, and I got letters, hate mail from her, and you abandoned me and you abandoned my mother and you need to come back in our life. I had to make amends with her. I did. It was safer being in a firefight overseas and going, but someone was with me and helped me and what to do. And I did make amends. I apologize for not being in her world. Now I'm the best thing in her world. I'm making one more year paying off her car. And she calls me dad, and I always I love it when you call me dad, Megan, and her mom is so grateful that I'm there. And I guess you gotta bond with somebody that you know you can be true and be friendly with and keep them in your life for the rest of your life, because they'll be there for they'll never forget you, especially in tight moments or something, scary times. Let that person know that you need them, and I'm sure they'll do what they can to make everybody can text now. I'm there for you. Okay. So
no excuses to not stick up for each other.
You guys connect. Don't ever drop. You know, stay in touch with each other for life. You know?
We have time for just a couple more questions.
Hi, John. My name's Cameron. I was wondering, what are some of your hobbies that you do? You said that you're serving for life and helping all the veterans. But what else do you do?
What are your hobbies? What do you like to do?
I used to like collecting stamps. I used to collect stamps, but no more. I had a 20-foot boat. I used to go out. It was Grady White, an old one. That broke down. Can't trust boat mechanics. Too expensive. Then I got a Baja Terminator center console, adrift in the bay for halibut. On weekdays, I always had a jar of Grey Poupon. They had a commercial, do you have any Grey Poupon? Sailboats would come by screaming, yelling at, hey, we're attacking, you have to move. I'm drifting, there's halibut underneath, they're going to bite. Oh, by the way, do you have any Grey Poupon? That always got them. But I couldn't afford the boat motor repairs anymore. I got rid of it, but I kept the fishing poles, and I fly kites hooked to a fishing pole. When my daughter was here last year, I said, Megan, come on with me, we're going to Ocean Beach. Had a big giant octopus kite, it's big as a Volkswagen. I said, here, man, she's flying it. And, you know, look, why look normal? You know, be different from everybody else. But
That's brilliant to use a fishing pole to fly a kite.
I like reading a lot, and I have a friend, Alan Kahn, worked with in the Vets Administration, Waco, Texas. Guys coming back in wheelchairs from Iraq and Gulf Storm. They were in wheelchairs, paralyzed, but he taught them how to hit a boxing speed bag. You use their upper body. They can do elbows, and it's like a beautiful ballet and make them feel good so they won't do something to take their life or OD on meds. And I said, I got to learn the speed bag. And I always knew how to hit a speed bag, but look on, there's a website, speedbagcentral.com. I've shown girls how to do the roll, and they, oh my God, I never knew I could do this. You know, they can, and the guys want to look cool and relax, just keep the arms up and do it. Oh my God, it sounds like music. That's a great hobby. Pastime, if you can find a place where you ain't going to irritate people. But it's speedbagcentral.com. Check out. You can learn how to hit the speed bag. Wonderful hobby. Especially the girls, they get out, outdo the guys, and then, honey, will you get me some flowers? Oh, yes, dear, yes, dear. Oh, they're doing the back. And I guess visiting people that are forgotten about, going back to the old folks' home. I used to take my dog and go, he'd see somebody in a lobby, put his head on their lap, Jojo, the big poodle, and that brings, somebody remembers that. Get together with a couple of people and go visit forgotten people.
Very nice. We're pretty much out of time. This has been, I hope you've had as much fun as I've had. I think you've given them an insight into who you are, not just as a Medal of Honor recipient, but as a human being, and the great service and kindness you do for other people. Thank you for sharing that with us today. And I hope you've all learned a lot of things from listening to John, and that you'll have conversations across the country about the ways that we can look outside ourselves and participate in service. I'm going to turn this back over to Diane now. Thank you, Ed Webb, and thank you all students and teachers all over the country for being here.
Thank you so much, John, for your service and for sharing that remarkable story with us here today. I think we're all moved by your candor and the wise advice you've given. And thank you, Kathy and CMOH, for helping make this possible. And to Mr. Robbins and the Steel Canyon High students, you guys are all fantastic. And please check out CMOH's site. You'll be able to access lesson plans there, learn about other recipients, and more. And please join the community on EdWeb at www.edweb.net/CMOH. You'll be able to watch past interviews, earn CE certificates, and participate in the discussion forum. You'll also be notified about upcoming webinars. So thank you again, all of you, and we hope to see you next time.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.